Patty McGee is an author educator whose passion and vision is to create learning environments where teachers and students discover their true potential and power. She is the author of Feedback That Moves Writers Forward, How to Escape Correcting Mode and Transform Student Writing. Patty's favorite moments are when groups of teachers are working with students collaboratively in the classroom. She has served schools nationally and internationally to support literacy teaching and learning. Patty believes we are all learners throughout our lives, and all of us are welcome into wholehearted learning experiences, no matter the age or the setting. So you can learn more about Patty and her work at pattymcgee.org. Enjoy the conversation. It's time to upgrade your life. Welcome to the Conscious Evolution Podcast. I'm Dr. Andrea Pennington, Chief Psychedelic Officer for Innate Vitality. In this podcast and our live events and retreats, we explore ways to hack enlightenment by integrating ancient wisdom and modern neuroscience with transpersonal psychology. From plant medicine and psychedelics to breathwork, mindfulness, and neurofeedback, my guests and I will shine a light on the unique capacity that we have to use our conscious mind to evolve individually and collectively as a species. Tune in each week on your favorite podcast player or the Pennington Media YouTube channel for interviews and discussions about holistic healing of trauma and adverse childhood experiences, burnout recovery, and intentional wellness. Patty McGee, it is so wonderful to connect with you again. Thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure and honor to be here talking with you. I learned so much from you this summer about resilience, and it's really made an impact on my life. So I'm so pleased to be able to talk to you again.
I am so happy. I loved being able to connect with you at Omega. And yeah, it was a wonderful little summer kind of nestling in and diving in. And I've been sort of diving into your background, and I'm really curious, especially about being a lifelong learner as I am. And as you know, I shared with you at Omega that my mother went to medical school in her late 30s. So if you can imagine that in the late 60s, that was a big deal. You know, she had me when she was 38. And so I'd love for you to kind of set the stage. Like, I know that you really believe that we are all lifelong learners, and it's our mindset and also our self-talk about our beliefs, about our ability to learn. You know, so many people have shifted careers or come out of retirement thanks to the pandemic. And I have been really shocked to hear people saying, I can't learn. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a couple of different ways that I think about learning, but I think that we can put it in almost two categories, where there's like school learning and then there's outside of school learning. And my wish is that there was not such a hard line between the two. Because yes, going back to school and learning about something we're passionate about is one wonderful type of learning. And also, we don't have to be back in school to be continuously learning. School can be part of that, but it doesn't have to be. And I believe that to really live a full, wholehearted, and fulfilling life, that it's important that we keep learning at the forefront of our lives, whatever that might be, whatever our passions are. And sometimes those passions can be fueled and fertilized in a school or classroom setting. And sometimes it happens outside of that space where we're seeking. I think part of it is, especially the older we get, when we quiet ourselves and we listen to what are the curiosities that are within, what are the places that I feel, as Martha Beck talks about, I feel warm. To go toward that warmth. And learning can be something we define in a broader sense, that it can include school, it can include following passions outside of school, and it can be a combination of both. If school is a place that we feel drawn to, I'm in a similar situation. When I was 17, my mom went back to school for nursing, and her greatest fear was just being able to do school again, to follow those school rules and to be able to just, you know, do what students do. And really, she found that doing what she does by being curious and following those curiosities in nursing school led her to great success and a whole other career. I do think that one of the perks of this, as if I could even use the word perk, maybe I should say silver lining of this past few years, are people saying, no, this state that I'm in right now, whether it's my profession or I just feel stagnant, and I've been this way for too long, it's time for me to try something new. And learning is one of those ingredients into becoming our next better version of ourselves.
Well, I love that you bring up this idea of what makes us warm, or that sense of passion, because as you've described it, you say that learners of all ages basically either build opportunities or we build limitations for how we learn. And so this idea of self-created limitations is really, it resonates with me. So could you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. Something just personally that I have found in my life is that I have an internal set of messages that I have accepted, whether knowingly or not, into my mind and heart. And living by those messages creates, just as you said, opportunities or limitations. And when I pause and examine, what messages am I holding as a person, as a woman, as a mother, as a business owner? What messages are serving me and those around me that I wish to serve? And what messages do I really need to take a closer look at that are holding me back? And I think that that's the first step for us as we think about who we are and who we'd like to be, is that pausing and looking at what messages are in me that I am following, what messages have been told to me that perhaps I have embraced unknowingly, but are also looking to rewrite. And so all of them are made up by someone. And being that they're all made up by someone, I have the power to decide if that is right for me as well. So when it comes to learning, what messages are we telling ourselves about learning? Some of us feel suited for a school setting, young and older, where that's their place, and some don't. And to take a moment and really pause and say, well, what makes me feel that I'm not suited for this? What beliefs have I held closely that are adding these limitations to what I can explore? And to really, as you've taught me, meditate on that and think about where we can go with those messages and that belief system to elevate our next steps in learning.
Do you have any insight on how someone would evolve their consciousness if they have had these messages of limitation? How would you support either an adult or a child in the classroom? Do you have ways to help people reframe that internal conversation?
Yes, absolutely. And I think when it comes to, because I work with both educators, grown-ups, and students sometimes at the same time, when it comes to students, it's almost easier because there's almost like a more pliable way of accepting a new belief system the younger students are. So, for example, a student might simply state, like, I'm not good at writing. And then my response to that is to name out the strengths for that student. So what I notice you're able to do is, and to list out those strengths. when it comes to us grown-ups, those determinations of ourselves have really solidified. And so taking a look at what we're saying and choosing new words for it, this is really the self-compassion work. And I want to say from our Omega retreat, this was the part that I really went there for the most and have been working on the most for myself. So it's looking at what is it that's being repeated in my mind? When and how did that serve me at one point? Kind of saying thank you to that for serving me then and saying it's now time to grow out of that. Let's find new words for this. So if as adult learners, we might say something like, I've just never been built for school. School was never for me. Well, what did that and when did that serve me? And how did it serve me? And then we say, thank you for doing that. But here I'm ready for something bigger and newer. And then taking tiny baby steps with that. And then truly meditating on, well, what is it? Where's that discomfort? Sometimes putting words around the discomfort, just sometimes noticing this discomfort, and then imagining where we want to go and be. And as we do that, time and time again, little by little, we start to expand the definition of ourselves and the opportunities we can invite and also seek out.
I love that. It's sort of the pendulation between being here in acceptance of what is and future projecting to where I want to grow to be in a gentle way. I love that. And one of the other things that you talk about is wholehearted learning experiences. What does that mean to be wholehearted? I feel like I'm always, well, let me say, when it's something I enjoy, when I'm passionate about something, it can feel like a wholehearted experience. But what does that translate to you for you?
Yes. To me, wholehearted learning experiences come with that joy, absolutely, and that feeling of, oh, just there's an elation to it when we've done or become or learned something. And yet that can't happen without there also being discomfort. If we're always feeling elated and never uncomfortable, I don't know if we're actually in a wholehearted space of living. I had a college professor who said to me once, if you're feeling frustrated or uncomfortable, that means you're about to learn something. So to me, wholehearted learning is accepting the emotions of discomfort, frustration, a feeling of maybe defeat, a feeling of I thought I could do this, and just saying, oh, hello, I see you here. And I know that that's not something that's going to really stand in my way forever. So wholehearted learning brings in all of the emotions that come with learning. And because of that, we come out on the other side into that joyful space that you just described.
I love it because it's a mindful approach. It's a heartful approach. So you've worked with children in the classroom. You also work with other educators speaking internationally even. How have you seen education on the whole evolve? Like for me, as you know, I have a 15-year-old and she's very clever. She noticed things about the, shall we say, screwed up education system that, of course, I noticed, but I didn't have the foresight like she has had to talk about it and to literally rebel against it. So now what I'm seeing is that younger people are interacting with their teachers in different ways, interacting with the curricula in different ways. Homeschooling is now not just a weird niche thing. And I've also seen that the acceptance of neurodiversity changes the whole dynamic. So I'm curious for you, because you've been in it for a long period of time, how do you see education evolving?
So I'm seeing education as a system evolving differently in different places. So the more that student voice is not only heard, but sought to be shared as input in school systems. I'm seeing a more holistic approach to education. So thinking about your daughter who's seeing things about education and is calling education's bluff on them, those places that are saying, oh, I never noticed that. That's just been around us all the time. Let's examine that and let's do something with that. So I'm seeing that group of educational places really evolving in big ways and blurring that line that I was mentioning earlier between like the learning outside of school and the learning inside of school and making them more intertwined. And then I'm seeing schools that are trying to hold on to the traditional school sense of, you know, this is how we've always done it. And it's the student's job to conform to that. And I'm not seeing as much evolution that's happening there in the schools themselves. However, what I am seeing in students is learning anyway, including school, but saying, okay, but that's school learning. And now I'm following my passions and learning outside of school. So it's like, okay, I get that these are the rules here. I can try and change them the best that I can. But I am also, whether I realize it or not, whether they say it or not, they're just curious. And so they're taking their outside of the school building time and following those passions. And I am finding, as even though there are some things about the way that we're connected so much through social media, that there are some things that are not that good about that. However, it's also creating just such vast learning spaces for those who are curious, and school's not checking that box for them. So that's what I see.
I'm glad you highlighted that distinction, and I'm glad that students are finding their own way. My daughter did, and I kind of just sort of had to learn from her to really create opportunities for her to engage in constructive learning inside and outside of school in ways that served her. And I know that the other aspect for me personally has been, I like to have fun when I'm learning. I was one of those kids that did flashcards or I would act things out. You know, I created mnemonics. So I know that you're also a big proponent of play and integrating play into learning. Tell me more about that.
Yes. So there's Purposeful Play is one of my favorite books for educators around this. And yet I think it really speaks to all of us in learning at any age. When we play, just getting a little educationally nerdy for a second, Vygotsky and his zone of proximal development, he talks about just how there's this space around us where when we are within the zone of proximal development or ZPD, that means that we're in the space to learn. If we go beyond that, we're in a place of shutdown. If we don't go into that space, we're simply staying status quo. And so through the act of playing, we actually naturally put ourselves in that zone of proximal development, into the learning space. And so having the opportunity to play with ideas, to play and hypothesize, to question, to seek out experts, to experiment and approximate, and then see what happens, that is truly where the learning happens. And it's something that's so ingrained in us, I want to say down to the cellular level, because when we take away others' expectations and we put ourselves into the space of playfulness, whatever that might be, we find ourselves naturally doing the things that we need to learn. With autonomy and independence, we're seeking out those things that we love to learn. So just taking a playful mindset, it also just helps us a lot too. We're just like, let's play around with this. That word is so different than I'm going to learn this. Well, play is learning at every age, and it sounds different for everyone. And depending on whatever it is that we are seeking to learn to become more fulfilled in our lives, just approaching it with that sense of play invites in all the natural things that we do to learn.
I love that. I love it because when I'm working with people in my speaker training, and getting them ready for interviews, I ask them, just let's just pretend. You know, I bring in pretend, which for me, that was my mode of play as a kid. Let's just pretend that, you know, this is just a conversation, or we're just doing a practice. This isn't for the whole world. But opening up that sort of idea that, or maybe this is just an experiment. Let's just do an experiment and see what happens, because we'll get feedback and then we can tweak and move on there. And I find that that helps people kind of lower their fear and their anxiety.
Yes. Yes. And another word that I really love, again, it's an educational word, but I think that we can all embrace it in our learning, is the word approximation. That we don't have to go, what does Voltaire say? Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Like, when we just do the best we can, that's an approximation of what we're eventually going to be. And that's a really important step in learning. When we are looking to just input into our head and then just become perfect at whatever that is that we're learning, we're missing out on really, really the ingredients that we need to have that learning become a true part of us. So approximating, so that's what you're doing when you're experimenting. You're, let's play around with this conversation, and gives us a chance to do our best at it. When we look at little ones, they're constantly approximating. It's so cool to watch. So I have a 21-year-old and a 16-year-old. And so with 5 years between them, the 16-year-old back when they were 2 years old, looking at the 7-year-old on the scooter, constantly wanting to do the same thing. So we would approximate. We'd put the little helmet on, I'd hold the scooter, and they would just try and scooter with their foot the best that they could. And eventually, they were able to scooter. But that kind of approximation comes naturally when we're younger, and I think we need to accept and welcome and seek out when we're older.
That's a great visual. That's a really great visual. So I want to shift into another aspect, which I know you're an expert on because you wrote the book on it. As I think of myself as a teacher, with my authors and with my speakers, I'm really curious to hear your feedback. I know that I, as you know, used to be a little bit of a perfectionist, and that has influenced my teaching style. But in your book about how to escape correcting mode and transform student writing, I bet there are probably some things that I could learn. I know it was written more for educators, but tell me about your book and that approach.
Absolutely. Yes, I focused it in on writing in particular, but there are so many parts of this that are universal. And in fact, the greatest influence for me when it came to giving feedback was actually looking at the relationship between my dad and my aunt. So my dad crochets, and that is kind of novel. I haven't found anyone else who has a dad who crochets. And he's been crocheting for years. And my Aunt Helen, his sister-in-law, I think started to crochet from like the time she could walk. She was crocheting. And let me connect the dots here. So when I was in the classroom and I was looking at how am I giving feedback to my students, I was constantly looking out for the things to fix. And I was kind of stuck in that fix it mode. And I needed to find other examples in this world of, well, how else can I give feedback without telling people what to fix? Well, I looked at my aunt and my dad. So my dad and my aunt would sit side by side, and my dad would share something that he's working on. And my aunt would say something back to him about what is working, what's a strength within that. So even if his blanket was crooked, even if there were holes filling it, something that she could say to him and often did was, look at the stitching down here. the way that you brought in that stitching, that's different from the last time. You've really worked on that. And then she would take her own crocheting materials and she would show him what something that he wanted to work on. So everything that she was teaching was based on a strength and then offering a next step to that strength. And so whenever we give feedback in or out of the classroom, we can simply say, so what is it that you want to work on? Something I noticed that strong is, and because you're doing that, you're ready for. And I know it sounds almost silly to have those talking stems, but they really helped me reshape what I was looking for. So I'm first seeking out from the learner, adult, friend, one of my kids, of my parents, whatever. Well, what is it that you're looking for feedback on? And then I'll say, so here are some strengths that I noticed, and here's something that I think is a next step. Or because you have that strength, you're ready to try this. And that reshaping of the wording made a huge impact on how people, students in the classroom, but also people respond. They feel seen when you name their strengths. Often, people don't know their strengths because they're already walking around with a fix-it mindset about themselves. All these things that are wrong with me, let me name them out. Let me repeat them to myself. And that's how we identify. Well, we can also identify with those things that are strong and then build on those strengths. And so finding the wording, those stems, just helped me reshape the way that I approached both myself and my students and the other people in my life in the way that I respond to them. Trying not to be the fixer of everything, but the person who notices, oh, here's what's working. And then just thinking of the tiny next step that I can offer you from my own experience.
I love that. So it goes from fixing to feedback. It's yes. Just feedback focused on strengths. That's the feedback yes. That moves writers forward. That's also the name of the book. Feedback that moves writers forward, how to escape correcting mode and transform student writing. I'm so grateful. I'm actually really grateful for those stems. You said it may sound silly. To me, it doesn't sound silly at all, because if you happen to be like someone like me who grew up with very harsh, critical, correcting parents, then I have not had any modeling of what is a more kind, gentle, strengths-based way to deliver feedback. So I'm grateful to have that modeling with those stems that helps us, you know, create a sentence that's not going to create shame and shut someone down.
Yeah, absolutely. And really one of the places, and this is one of the reasons I wrote the book, is like the place that many of us, and I would say the majority of us, hold the most shame in something academic is when we write. So writing can be, and I would argue, especially in academic settings, that writing is the most vulnerable academic act someone can take on. So when we start in a place where shame just kind of looms anyway, and being an educator, that was my space to bring it to. But yeah, it speaks universally to everyone that shame is always looming. It's at least, especially for me, it's just something that has been part of my life and that I'm working on so much. And at the same time, knowing that the words we choose in the face of shame diminishes its power and lets us go into that playful space without having that kind of self-judgment.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So what are you working on? What are you excited about for 2022 and beyond?
So, oh gosh, I have a couple of things that I'm working on. I just filmed, basically in the education world, something like a masterclass on ways that we can build really inclusive, supportive, and effective writing spaces in the classroom. So it's based on my latest book, which is The 7 Essentials of Writer's Workshop. I also filmed classes that go with that through Benchmark Education. And it's really beautifully done because there's an incredible production team that went on behind that. So that's my here in 2022. But my big personal goal in both professional and in my life is to continue to surround myself with those who teach me and also those who hold up mirrors so that I can see what it is that I can work on and hold that nurturing tone to help me grow. And so those are the intentions that I set for 2022, is to find and bring toward me those experiences.
It's beautiful. You're committed to the path of your own conscious evolution. I love it. Yes. Well, Patty, it's been a joy to connect with you again and to hear more of your insights and your brilliance. Congratulations on the masterclass and the course and the new book, or your most recent book. These are all good things.
Thank you. Thank you. And I just want to say to you that you're part of my everyday journey. Your words, your messages, everything that I have learned from you. And so I hope that in my work, I'm manifesting what you've brought to me and then in turn bringing it forth to others. So thank you.
I'm certain that you are. You're most welcome. It is such a joy and a pleasure. So people can connect with you online, whether you're an educator or a parent who might need some insight, visit pattymcgee.org. And are you on any social media?
Yes, I'm on Twitter, at PMGMcgee is my handle. And I have a website, like you mentioned, but also you can connect with me through email there as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us to talk about really evolving our sense of being a lifelong learner. Thank you.
Thank you.
So there you have it, my friends. You have heard from the master. Definitely check her out online at pattymcgee.org and check out her books as well. Until we meet again, remember that you are a gift to the world. So share your presence with passion. Much love.
Thank you for tuning into the Conscious Evolution Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave us a review and rating on your favorite podcast player. This helps us get the content out to a larger audience. And to watch the video version of the podcast, visit the Pennington Media YouTube channel. Want more info on how psychedelics may improve your mental well-being, how to choose a retreat, or what to look for in a shaman? Get on the Psychedelic Curious email journal. The link is in the show notes and on my website, andreapennington.com. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series, where each month I take a deep dive into a topic in holistic healing, trauma recovery, self-love, resilience, and psychedelic-assisted therapy.